Well, hello there. Welcome to the Expressive Mom Show. Miriam Salzberg here, and it's great to have you here. And I have pointed out this to so many people many times before, many times in previous shows, as well as in my previous blog posts. Parents who are raising children with special needs or learning differences are unable to do it alone. And you know the saying, it takes a village to raise children. Well, sometimes it takes several communities when it comes to raising children with special needs. The goal for every child, regardless whether they have special needs or not, is to help them grow into independent and self-confident adults. However, parents raising children with special needs, they definitely need extra support in order to help make that happen. So I am honored to have Dr. Odie Raviv, a highly skilled, trained New York learning specialist with over 30 years' experience as a guest, and he will be discussing the realities of raising children with special needs and learning differences. So I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome Dr. Odie Raviv. Hello, doctor. It's so great to have you.
Oh, thank you so much, Miriam, for inviting me. I really look forward to the interview and the opportunity to share some information to parents who are facing the challenges of education in this very, very high-focused world on achievement.
That's right. Yes, yes. And you are so right. This world is very, 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 very focused on achievement. And that's, you know what, and that is okay. That's actually a good thing. But I think some parents need to be realistic on what their children can achieve. But we also never want to put barriers on anything. But before we get into any of that, how about you talk about your background and how you got into what you're doing?
Okay, thanks. I was always interested in working with kids from a young age. I got a kick out of helping younger kids with sports, and that sort of led me to be interested in becoming a teacher. And I started teaching in New York City in some very challenging neighborhoods. And I had a good friend's mom who said, I can get a great job for you, but it's with special ed kids. And I said, sure, let me try. So I did that for a number of years. I really enjoyed working with a variety of kids with special needs, kids with behavior issues, autistic kids on the autism spectrum, learning differences. And I really was so committed to it that I wanted to become a teacher trainer. So I was offered a fellowship at the University of Florida and working towards my PhD in special education. And then I came back and ended up back in the New York City school system doing a variety of things, working with a resource program, which is a program to try to help kids stay in the mainstream while getting support. And that was a new program when it was formulated, and it became a model that was duplicated in many parts of the country. And after that, I continued working on a private practice along with the teaching, and I really enjoyed helping kids achieve and feel better about their about what they could do, and really became someone who knew that if I gave them the skills and strategies and could inspire them to feel that they, if they try things differently and try to instill determination, that the progress could be made. And that's something which I've been doing for the last 30 years.
Well, that's fantastic. That's really great. I think what you're doing is a wonderful thing. So, you know, I've actually been very interested in knowing this. Now, when you started working, I'm sure things were a lot different back then when it comes to teaching children with special needs. So what would you say, do you say that's true? Do you feel things have really, really changed over the last few years compared to when you started working with children with extra needs?
I think that things have changed greatly. First, you know, a couple of important things. Firstly, there was an amazing push in the late 70s in trying to have special needs kids mainstreamed as much as possible. We really moved away from the model where we put them in self-contained classes and segregated parts of the building and segregated schools. Parents got educated, knew the law, which said that children are entitled to an appropriate education, no matter what their special needs are. That was that came in 1975 in the States. And so from that, there really became a big push to try to mainstream, was the big word, trying to have kids be in regular classes as much as possible. A variety of models were tried, and that was really, really important. So that was one front. And the second front really became, you know, parents becoming more aware of the special needs that their kids had, and not feeling that just because they were labeled as being special ed that their future was sort of stilted, that there was a chance for them to succeed if they received the proper education, if they had the right support, if they could go to schools that gave them education that involved after-school programs, summer programs, if people really worked towards finding their strengths and passions, they could succeed according to their potential instead of being neglected and felt that their future would be pessimistic. Optimism could be part of the formula. So that was a big part. And parents, instead of being shamed that their kids were not doing well in school, felt that if they worked hard and were advocates that things could improve. That became, I think the second big push. And the third thing, which is happening now, is the increased rigor and the push towards achievement across the whole school system. And unfortunately, USA has been really getting tanked on testing compared to other countries. So there's a big movement to push towards higher standards. And unfortunately, special needs kids, can't fit into an automatic box and can't do things exactly as everybody else can, lockstep. So that made the kids with special needs and their parents frustrated and are trying to find a balance for how they can compete with kids who may not have the challenges that they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is absolutely true. I mean, I see that too because my son has a mild form of autism, but he does have pretty moderate ADHD, and he's actually at a special school, and he's he's learning a lot of life skills. He's learning what he needs to learn, and he'll have his future set up. I'm not too concerned because I'm helping him get there as well. That's what I'm doing. But you know what? You bring up a good point. And I mean, there still are self-contained classrooms and different schools. I mean, there still are because sometimes that is what is best for some of these kids. Sometimes that is what is best.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, and it is what it is with that. So now I'm going to ask. You must be seeing a lot of different diagnoses happening. Mm-hmm. So what would you say, what do you see, what kind of diagnoses are you seeing more often than you used to say?
There are a lot of diagnoses. Just to piggyback on your last point, it's true that, that many public schools are not able to give the environment and the learning the learning atmosphere that is required, and many parents realize that in order to give their children the best chance, that sometimes finding an appropriate private school is the best way to go. And I definitely believe that's important. The diagnoses that I'm seeing a lot of kids coming to me with the ADHD diagnoses.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing an interesting increase in, there's two forms of ADHD. There's the category of the typical, which we think of the kids who are hyper, the kids who are moving around, can't sit still, need to move physically. And the other type is inattentive, where we have lots of kids who just have processing and focus issues because of distractibility internally, not necessarily responding to outside stimuli. So I think the last 5-6 years, many parents have seen that and have become to understand that that is another form of ADHD. And typically it used to be boys to girls would be 3 to 1, 4 to 1. And interestingly, there's more girls lately have been diagnosed with ADHD with the inattentive type. And that is a very interesting diagnosis. And many kids... parents have a hard time seeing it because they see it, my child may be lazy, why can't they get on track? Teachers really have a hard time understanding that also. So many times it's important for them to bring in a learning specialist, someone like me, to try to help the parents and the teacher and, of course, having the student understand why they're struggling, really trying to give them tools and strategies, try to instill more determination, try to come up with time management strategies, prioritizing. And that lays into the other big new diagnoses, which is executive functioning issues. And executive functioning really plays into the idea of a kid not being able to really know how to proceed. A younger kid might have problems with a math word problem where they have to do one step or two steps instead of just adding a combination of numbers. And you know, these kids have issues with juggling multiple tasks successfully, following instructions, focusing attention. They are very often very disorganized. They get overwhelmed easily, and they really need a lot of help with planning and decision making. And I found that is a big that's been tacked on to a lot of neuropsych evaluations, along with kids who have learning disabilities or ADHD. Executive functioning is there, and many parents are asking me, what do I do? Well, I don't really understand that. So explaining that to them, trying to have them understand why their kids are having issues with how to do a project that involves a lot of planning. And I really try to help kids with that, kids in that area. And it's amazing that EF really is a big struggle for kids who go away to college. And a lot of my practice, I have kids who are away, and they just don't know how to stay on track without having their parents over their shoulder. And many times, they fall apart. Sometimes I'll try to help them either with Skype or phone calls, but many times they come back home and then they have to go to local colleges or community colleges to sort of reinvent themselves as students, learn how to learn study skills, learn how to organize themselves. So I think that ADHD and executive functioning are big, and then of course, to a degree, we also have kids on the spectrum where parents are understanding that their kids who may have social issues and sociability issues should be referred for evaluation and try to see what's the impediment for them to be verbal or social, and then hopefully we can enlist services and try to catch it as early as we can and give them ways to socialize through a combination of behavior interventions, but also quality socialization with artists, teachers who are artists, who understand how to really touch and connect with them.
Okay, yep. And by the way, I completely understand how ADHD can affect females. I do, because guess what? I have it.
Oh, really?
Yes, well, the way you described it is just who I am. And my daughter has a very mild form of it, too. So you know what? This is good for me to know to help her plan ahead for when she is going. She's at that stage where she's about to go to university. She's actually she's actually turning 13 next week. Wow, a teenager. But anyway.
But what you're saying is, we found so many, many, many cases are truly genetic. I'm sure you might know that, but
yes.
I don't know if all your listeners know that there are the big genetic incidents with learning disabilities, ADHD. It seems to really play in one side of the parent or both sides, and it's really interesting. And many parents, when they had their kid evaluated, they said, "Boy, that sounds like the way I used to be and why I was having issues when I was in school." And that's interesting.
It can actually be a good thing in many ways, because I'm very good with social media. I'm a social media manager, so I think that helps me in some ways.
Sure.
Because my clients say to me, "How do you even do that?" Oh, I just do it. So anyway. Yeah.
Well, I think it's important to know, that many people with ADHD, turn out to be some of the most successful entrepreneurs and business people
they
because they sort of think outside the box. They have a lot of passion. They have they have goals, and they don't really realize. Sometimes people would say, how can you do it this way?" And they just go ahead and say, "I think we can do it. I think I need to do it. I want to do it." And it's really important. I really try to tell my parents that they really have to look for the long term. They try to give your kids as many opportunities to feel good about themselves with activities, with even if they're not going to be great academics per se, but if they can find passions outside the classroom, that builds so much confidence and so much feelings of possibility. And it's really hard, because when those report cards come and there's C's and D's and F's, the kids feel bad, the parents take a deep breath, and they still get angry or get upset, and it's hard for them to really take positive steps, which I think that they have to do, try to come up with any possible way, you know, to help their kid learn how to improve as a student. You know, it's always important to work on the reading and writing skills, because those are important, I think, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Even though you may get turned off by certain, you know, courses, or be it a science, or if you're not interested in history, but, you know, those kids have a hard time finding motivation to work on those areas, because it's so hard for them, and they see kids that are just, you know, they consider, you know, I'm just as smart as you know, as so-and-so, and he or she barely has to work, and they get A's or B's. You know, what's going on with me? I have to work much harder, and I'm just getting a B, or if I'm lucky, because my memory is not pitch perfect. It takes me so hard to initiate writing. So it's a really very, very interesting. But, you know, I think that it's so important, you know, for, you know, shows like this and for, you know, some of the passions you have, for parents to really look long-term and try to, you know, be happy that their kids are doing positive things, have good friends, have a nice peer relationship, or involved with activities. And then finally, you know, the light will come where they'll find something which excites them, and they'll be willing to spend more time on their schooling and find a career that would be a good match for the skills and talents that they have.
Well, that's exactly what I'm doing with both of my kids. I want them both to be confident, self-sufficient, independent adults, and the trick is for them to find what they want. And a lot of people don't even know what they want, and that's when they get into trouble. Regardless of whether they have issues like ADHD or not, you know, if you don't know what you want, you're going to be struggling, you know. And that's a shame, and that happens to so many people. So now I'm going to ask what would you say the differences are between learning disabilities or learning differences?
Well, I'm not sure, you know, exactly how in terms of, you know, Canada versus the U.S., but in the U.S., the term learning disabilities really is a definition, it's a legal definition. And specific learning disabilities appears in special education law that came about in 1975. It's called the IDEA, the Individual with Disabilities Education Act, and that is the act that guaranteed a free and appropriate education for children with special needs, no matter what those are. And in order to get special class, special placement, small classes, more services, be it OT, occupational therapy, physical therapy, extra speech, you needed to have a classification. So that was why the category of learning disabilities came about. And there are a variety of disability classifications within that. And then, you know, learning differences is sort of a broader term which focuses on the idea that there are many different ways that a child learns the most appropriately. You know, some kids are more auditory learners, some are more visual, some kids have fabulous short-term memories but have difficulties with long-term memory.
Yes.
And then some kids may be able to remember things from way back, but trying to remember something which happened in class yesterday, for some reason, it doesn't stick with them, and those are the kids who need...
That's me.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You tell me something yesterday, I'm not going to remember, but if something happened 20 years ago, I'm going to remember as if it happened yesterday. So.
Well, it's so interesting when we have a chance to look at those things, and when you get a neuropsych that examines that closely, it can really open up a lot of windows to ways to improve as a student. And those are why a great neuropsych is, you know, what I like to get to be able to explain to the family, to the student, and to the teachers, you know, why this kid is struggling, and try to come up with ways to, you know, focus on their strengths and compensate for their weaknesses. So, you know, it's really a fascinating field. And I think that, you know, just in terms of a politically correct to a degree, I think it's easier to say, you know, that learning differences as opposed to learning disabilities. Learning disabilities is really focusing on the negative. Learning differences is saying, you know, we're different, and that doesn't mean that we don't have learning unique learning abilities. Just they have to be presented in the proper way, and
they have to be taught in a different way.
Can be fine tuned, can be tweaked. Yeah, so that's mm-hmm. that's an important thing for, I understand. With
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here, yeah.
I think we lost him.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay. For a second,
I
thought we lost you. Okay.
No, I hear you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for a moment, I thought I lost you. So I'm going to ask you this. Now, this is something that a lot of people are saying and speculating and wondering if it's really true. But it is true that more boys receive the diagnosis of ADHD or autism more than girls?
Yes, it has been stated by the investigators that it's about a 3-to-1 margin with boys diagnosed with ADHD, and what we've seen, as I think I mentioned briefly, that we have the ADHD, which is the hyperactive category, the more stereotypical classification, has had a preponderance more boys in that area, because those are the boys seem to be have more motor needs in a classroom. It goes back to the idea that we feel, and educators have felt, that women, girls, of course, fit better into the institutionalization of education, and that involves more sitting, more ability to sit back and be interactive back and forth with the teacher. Girls also have more developed language skills at a younger age than boys. So when kids start school in their early years, and how you do at the beginning, if you are successful in first, second, and third grade and you feel good about school, then you buy in and you continue to focus on what the goals are motivated towards getting that great feedback from the teachers, you get used to getting A's and B's, and you buy into it. And if boys have a hard time at the beginning and they don't feel that it's the right place for them, they end up getting stimulated perhaps by being aggressive or being the bossy or the bully guy, and that's how they build up their social awareness and their social credibility, so to speak, and they don't focus on getting good grades, and that pattern continues. And what's happened now, as I mentioned quickly earlier before, is that some girls who we thought before were just lazy or were unmotivated and seemed to tune out, those girls also have ADHD, and a good neuropsych will come up with some of the processing issues that they confront. But above all, I think what's happening, unfortunately, is that the lack of physical outlets and sort of the boring or bland teaching methods that are around lead to kids getting off track and not being interested in what's going on, and then those kids are sort of typecast as a behavior problems. So we need to understand that kids, not just the boys, but girls too. I mean, there's got to be a good balance of physical activities and also trying to come up with activities that focus in on some of their needs, their passions, be it arts or music or that kind of thing. And if that's interspersed, then kids will have a better feeling about their experience in school and buy into the whole process, and not just feel that going to school is a torturous part of their day, which I think unfortunately many kids feel when you ask them what they think about school. They don't want to tell you anything as a parent, and when it's just like, oh no, vacation's over, no snow day today, that kind of thing. So I think that's a big mistake. So school has to can be a place where kids feel good about what they're doing and are stimulated. I think there's also a tendency when kids act out that people think that if they were medicated, that that would solve everything. And many school districts and systems, you know, we've gotten data, you know, 18-19% of boys in some public schools in the South, in the Mid-South, are on medication because they're acting out, and teachers are pushing, educators are pushing, and parents and pediatricians, unfortunately, go in lockstep. And many times we have kids who are taking medication, not even being prescribed by a psychiatrist or by a pharmacologist expert. It's just a pediatrician who's just listening to what the parents are saying. And for the kids to be successful, my experience, you know, back to what you said about, you know, taking a village to a degree, it really means that kids need, even if they're on meds, they need to have oftentimes they need psychotherapy to deal with their emotional issues, and then someone, you know, in my field, an educational therapist, a learning specialist, someone who can try to help them understand how they have to learn differently, how they can take advantage of who they are as a student, and try to come up with ways for them to feel that I can make changes. I'm not stuck in this rut. I don't have to be a C student, a D student. If I make changes and have goals and ways to get mm-hmm. those goals, I can change.
That can help with their self-esteem as well.
Right. Yeah. Self-esteem is so important. You know, when kids are beaten down by low test scores and being compared to their neighbors, or sometimes parents compare them to their siblings.
That's the worst thing you can do.
It is. It's hard, but parents feel so stressed sometimes. So a lot of times they're just happy sometimes to have someone like me to be in between, sort of a facilitator. Mm-hmm. So they don't feel like they have to always be the ones who are pushing and nagging their kid. So sometimes it's really nice to have someone in between, a facilitator, and the kids like it because there's someone objective who's in their corner. You know, they know that mm-hmm. mom and dad are always going to, you know, say good work, good, you know, nice try. But if you have someone who sees the big picture, a lot of them, they really respond to that in a real positive way. So, you know, so it's really great to see that. And it's always wonderful.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And we're almost out of time, so.
It went so fast.
I know. You know what? Time flies when you're having fun. So finally, Dr. Odie, I'd love you to share how people can get in touch with you.
Yeah, please get in touch with me. It's odeyraviv at AOL.com. So it's odeyraviv@AOL.com. And love to hear, you know, any questions. And you can track me down, 516-732-1617. I'm located in New York and Long Island, but I also do work Skype and speak to kids all over and help parents. And more than a pleasure to just give you some directions and try to help you with some of your struggles. And I just can't thank you enough, Miriam, for letting me share this time with you and your audience.
Well, thank you so much, Odie, for coming on as a guest. You provided us mm-hmm. with a wealth of information. Thank you so much.
Good.
And you have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the week. And everybody, mm-hmm. be well. Talk to you next week. Bye for now.